This is the CineSnob Podcast.
Welcome to episode 138 of the CineSnob Podcast. I'm Jared Kingery.
I'm Cody Viafania.
So, Cody, this is going to be my last show for a couple weeks because I'm getting married in 5 days.
Yeah.
Yeah, 5 days. Sorry.
It's your last podcast as a unmarried man.
Yeah. Yeah. So whatever that means.
It means that we should have reviewed Bachelor Party or something.
Right? Or The Hangover.
Oh, bro. Yeah. Yeah, bro. Todd Phillips.
Hey, you know what? I still stand by the first Hangover as being funny. The other two were not.
The other two were atrocious. I mean, let's not mince words.
The second one I legit hated, and the third one like wasn't even trying to be funny.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think the third one was trying at all. The first one, I think there is some funny stuff in it, but I think it was like two on the heels of, you know, that Wedding Crashers and 40-Year-Old Virgin summer. And I think that it doesn't hit like quite the same notes as I think both of those movies, which I think are still really good and hold up really well.
I haven't seen Wedding Crashers in a long time. I'm curious how that holds up. I still love the 40-Year-Old Virgin, but I'm curious if Wedding Crashers holds up today.
I haven't seen it in a couple of years, but last time I watched it, I found it quite enjoyable.
Because you were playing Tummy Sticks.
Yep.
I was listening to something the other day, and they mentioned that there's a Lil' Kim poster in that.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot about that.
There's a Lil' Kim poster in Meet the Parents.
Oh, shit. I'm sorry. God damn it. I got that confused.
It was because it's the line where he says, oh, Lil' Kim, she's fat.
Yeah. God damn it. I screwed that up. I was thinking, I guess Owen Wilson got me all screwed up.
Oh, yeah. He's in both of those movies.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like 10 years apart. Well, not that far apart. Anyway, getting off on a tangent here. So, yeah. Sorry we won't be doing a show on Maleficent, whatever it's called.
Or Zombieland 2.
Zombieland 2. Did you even get a screening for Zombieland 2?
Nope, we did not in our market.
We didn't either, and I don't think that bodes well.
I mean, I say this, I'm not trying to prejudge the movie or anything, but that trailer is really bad. That's a terrible trailer.
I feel like it's been just too long since Zombieland.
It has been, and I don't know that it really begs a sequel. Here's how I truly feel about it, is that I think that the whole movie is, like, it's strengthened by the Bill Murray cameo, and I feel like that kind of transcends it higher than being, like, a regularly average comedy. And I still think it is relatively average. I don't think it's that great. But without that ace up your sleeve, I don't really know that those four characters can really carry it to something that I really give a shit about seeing again.
Yeah. It's crazy how, like, the tides have turned on the cast. Because Jesse Eisenberg was in everything at that moment. Mm-hmm. Back then, and now it's switched to Emma Stone. Then I guess I don't know where Abigail Breslin's been the last couple of years, but I just don't care. But that reminds me, did you ever see the terrible Zombieland pilot that Amazon did?
Yep.
God damn, that was awful. It was like a remake of the film, but with like actors you'd never heard of, and it was in that. That time when Amazon was like pilot testing shows. I think that came out the same year as I believe there was an Onion show.
Yeah, there was an Onion, was it Onion Sports or no?
No, that was on Comedy Central. This was like a scripted show.
Was this the same year they did The Tick too?
No, well? The Tick was later.
The Tick, comma, this, as well.
This was the,
there was a John Goodman politics show.
Yeah, it was like the
Alpha House or something.
Yeah, Bill Murray was in that like briefly too. But the Onion show had Christopher Masterson from Malcolm in the Middle. And I think I want to say it had Jeffrey Tambor also before his
I think I know what you're talking about.
Before his implosion.
You know, that was an interesting concept, and then all the shows they were making sucked, so I think they had just threw in the towel on it.
Well, yeah, now I think they pretty much do like straight to series orders now.
Yeah, I like the pilot idea. I thought it was smart, but you have to have a good pilot.
The Tick was the last one, I think, that was that they did, and, or, well, at least the last one that was successful.
That they took the series, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, that's why you get stuff like Jack Ryan, and you're like, eh, I'll watch this for a couple episodes and then forget about it entirely.
Yeah.
And then there's a season two coming. I'm like, oh, shit, I never finished that. Anyway, we're getting
off. We're also not getting to review Jay and Silent Bob Reboot.
Oh, yeah. I asked you about that this morning because I didn't realize. Okay, I don't know why, but I didn't realize until just today that it's only playing in theaters via Fathom Events.
Yes, it's playing via Fathom and then Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes' like roadshow that are that's $50 right. bucks a pop.
Yeah, and you get to meet them.
No. You get to meet them for $600.
That's right. I'm sorry.
It's just
$50
to get in.
Yeah. fuck. But I didn't. I thought it was getting at least a small theatrical release, but it's not at all. It's only going to be playing Fathom Events the 15th, which is tomorrow for us here. That's Monday. Yeah. And then the 17th of October, which I don't understand. Look, nothing about it looks good to me. I will see it eventually, and I would kind of like to talk about it eventually, because I think we've had some very fun Kevin Smith discussions here.
Yeah, we have, and I've actually had a conversation with someone who doesn't listen to this show, but he's a major Kevin Smith stan, and
I hate that word, by the way. God damn it.
That's why I used it, because I hate it too. So I'm just going to embrace
it. Is that coming from the Eminem song?
Yes, that is where the term originated.
How the fuck? That song's like 15 years old.
Also, not really a thing you want to be, I don't think.
Yeah.
but
it's not a good example.
I truly hate it, so now I'm just trying to use it to rebel against it. But no, we had a long conversation about Red State and as well as the next the Yoga Hosers and Tusk, and just like trying to figure out how the hell, because I believe you and I watched both of those movies together, or we watched Tusk together for sure.
No, I watched Yoga Hosers in a theater literally by myself. Also a Fathom event, and they were very kind to me to give me the tickets, and it would have been a cool, very cool event. But you know, the movie stunk.
It was a level of bad that was surreal. Like that Johnny Depp scene is so surreal. And how utterly terrible. No, this was in Yoga Hosers, right? Where he's the detective, the bumbling detective.
He's also in Tusk too. That the scene where he's with
Michael Parks.
Yeah, that's in Tusk.
Is that in Tusk? Oh,
and like they're like Michael Parks is doing some stupid accent too.
Oh, he's doing like a mentally handicapped person. Oh,
okay,
accent.
Yeah, that's in Tusk,
dude. That scene is, and I'm not being hyperbolic here, one of the worst things that's ever been put to film. Like, it's just so horrendously bad. And we were just kind of talking about, like, at the point we got to Yoga Hosers, we're like, why are we watching this? Why is this getting made? How is this getting made?
Now, I will admit, I did like Red State. I haven't revisited it since. Revisited it since, but I remember it being pretty interesting. At least it wasn't a bad movie. Like the last two have been like legit terrible films.
The conversation that we were having, in my opinion, on Red State is that I think that Kevin Smith was the wrong guy to make that particular movie when it's sort of attacking and challenging the Westboro Baptist Church. And I think that he played it up as if it was some kind of incisive takedown that was supposed to be creepy, and what it really was and ended up being was kind of like wish fulfillment, which I think undercut any kind of like incisive point it was trying to make. And then of course it's just the dialogue is up its own ass a little bit, especially with Michael Parks's sermons and stuff like that. But
I mean, that's every Kevin Smith movie.
It is, but in this one in particular, when it had to do with, you know, at least the dialogue in some of his other movies is meant to be comedic in some way instead of trying to be fake profound or whatever.
I remember hating the ending though.
Yeah.
By the way, that just reminded me of the I think one of the funniest times I've laughed, one of the hardest laughs I've had in a theater was when you and I were watching Tusk. And there's supposed to be the.
I know what you're talking about.
I can't remember who plays the girlfriend in that film. Is it someone?
It's Genesis Rodriguez.
That's who it is. Okay, so there's supposed to be this like secret that she's cheating on Justin Long with someone, and as she gets off the phone with him, like this hand comes in and like caresses her face, and it's clearly the chubby, stumpy paw of Haley Joel Osment. It's like there's no mystery.
It's just big, fat, hairy hand that touches her face, and you're like, okay, well, come on.
And you know what? Good for fucking Haley Joel Osment, because he's just living in it now. Like like I don't know what happened. Like he kind of lost that genetic lottery, like the kid on Modern Family, where the little fat kid Manny. I don't know what the actor's name is, but. Like he just became a bigger version of his little fat self, and Haley Joel Osment just became a fat version of his little self, which is weird. But hey, you know, whatever. But yeah, that thinking that we weren't gonna be like, that's obviously fucking Haley Joel Osment's fat arm.
Oh man, I just remember not only cracking up about it in the theater, but we came on this show and just laughed about it because it's so. Not to, no pun intended, it's so heavy-handed.
Yeah. So, Jay and Silent Bob reboot is another one of those that has a ton of cameos. I think Ben Affleck's actually back, Matt Damon, a bunch of people from the old films. But God, everything I've seen of it, not only does it look like stupid dialogue, but it looks shitty.
It looks chintzy. Yeah,
like I remember, I think Kevin Smith posted a photo of I believe it was Jason Lee in like the comic book shop in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, and then like a side by side with the current film, the reboot.
Mm-hmm.
And like just the composition of the shot in the first one is so good, and this one just looks like crap. And I just look, I don't know why I expect more of Kevin Smith, but I at least don't. We're talking about this movie without even seeing it, but I think it's fair to say that, you know, his past experience, his past films have not been a experience that leads you to believe, well, this is going to be any good.
And I don't know what he's trying to accomplish, especially like reading the synopsis he put out of what Clerks 3 is going to be like. It just sounds so terrible. And I just don't really, again, like I said, I don't understand what he's trying to accomplish these days, because, you know, he hasn't come back to this unit, the Viewaskew universe, in quite some time. And if he's going to go back to the well, there needs to be some kind of reason to go back to that, because what he's doing is he's just clearly making this whole thing go way further than it needs to be. And I think it comes off, honestly, as a little bit like desperate to recapture or capture something that has long passed him by. And I, you know, maybe Jay and Silent Bob reboot is good. I don't know, but I know that Kevin Smith hasn't made a good movie in like a decade. So, you know,
I actually liked Clerks 2.
I do too. I think it's pretty good.
Yeah.
I actually like Zach and Mary Make a Porno. I think that's a perfectly fine comedy.
Yeah, it's fine. It's very Apatow aping and a little corny, but, yeah,
I don't hate the guy, and like you said, as in terms of the Viewaskew movies, I think Clerks 2 is pretty solid. But you know, something happened where, you know, I like when he started making movies out of his podcasts, I don't understand like what he's trying to do with this career turn. So I don't know.
Sorry, this is hitting. Is it going to digital and Blu-ray like right afterward?
I think it probably after their tour is done. I don't think that they're going to release it while they're still touring it.
Because I really want to talk about this movie. Because
not enough to pay $16 tomorrow for a Fathom ticket.
Well, I got a bunch of shit to do, but if I didn't have something, if I wasn't getting married this week, I'd go waste time watching fucking Kevin Smith. But yeah, it's not. I mean, I saw you get a free poster, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, that's cool.
But yeah, Yeah, there's a lot. Hey, you know what? I'm glad he's healthy now.
Oh yeah.
I'm glad he didn't die of that heart attack, and he looks weird, skinny. but I'm glad he's on the right track, health wise at least, not movie wise.
I don't think that you lose talent like that. Like the drop off is that steep. So I think that he's able to be a good screenwriter when he's focused and when he's not trying to make a joke on a lark. I mean, make a movie on a lark, but like, you know, I he needs more pointed focus, and maybe Clerks 3 is more poignant than it sounds on paper. I don't know. I hope it's good because I like those characters a lot. But you know, man, I don't think he's got the right focus and hasn't had the right focus in some time.
Well, I'll give him this for one thing, for better or worse, he's loyal as shit.
Yeah.
Because Brian O'Halloran is not a good actor.
Yeah.
And neither is Jason Mewes, and he keeps okay, Brian O'Halloran's okay. Jason Mewes is not. But those guys keep getting work at his hand. I think Jeff Anderson is actually pretty good. Is a pretty good character actor, and I love that he kind of discovered Jason Lee, who's kind of fallen off the face of the earth in the last few years.
Man, there's some legit throughout the series. We'll go back to this one, but like, both Affleck and Jason Lee are phenomenal in Chasing Amy.
Oh, I love that movie. I still love it. I mean, you know, dated politics aside, I still love that movie.
But I really think that Jason Lee is really great in that movie in particular.
Oh no, I totally agree.
And I wish that there was more of that from Jason Lee, because I think he's a really good actor that kind of, I think on his own, after My Name is Earl ended, he kind of just disappeared off the face of the earth willingly. And but I always really liked him, and it was because of that and because I love Jason Lee's character in Mallrats. I that's one of my favorite characters in that whole universe is him playing Brody in Mallrats.
Yeah, yeah. I remember there was a lot of plans by Kevin Smith to have him star in a bunch of shit. He was going to do like a Fletch reboot.
Yeah, he was going to be Fletch. Yeah.
Which I would have loved to have seen, but
I think that would have been a good casting. Kevin Smith has a bunch of those like never was type stuff, even his own stuff. Like he's been talking about making a hockey movie for like 15 years that has never materialized.
Oh yeah. And he had Ranger Danger and the Danger Ranger, some sort of sci-fi superhero thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was doing a Green Hornet.
Yep.
Then it got passed off to Michel Gondry.
He wrote a script for a Superman movie.
Oh yeah, that's the most famous one. That's the one, that's like the first script I read online. It's very corny. It's very like a dumber Joss Whedon script.
Oh really?
It's fine. It's fine.
J.J. Abrams have a Superman script out there in the universe?
I believe so. I know there's a Joss Whedon Wonder Woman out in the universe, and that like after what was the deal with Joss Whedon? Like it was like he was cheated on his wife or something.
Something like that.
That like everyone started hating him as a feminist.
Oh, people turned on him quickly.
Which I don't like. Okay, you cheated on his wife, but like, all right, whatever. But then like they like that script kind of surfaced after that, and people ripped to shreds because of that.
Oh really?
Yeah. I never read it myself. I don't know if it was sexist or not, but
anyway. Was Wonder Woman a man?
Yeah, I'm sure she had a lot of quips.
Ooh, I bet she was a quip. Yeah, that's his thing.
What do you got? What do you got? What do you got? Come on.
I got nothing.
Okay.
The steam has run out.
All right. Well, since we've run out of steam, let's go ahead and move on to reviews.
Here are this week's reviews.
First up this week, we have Gemini Man.
25 years ago, your father took my blood and he cloned me. He made you from me. He chose me because there's never been anybody like me, and he knew one day I was going to get old and then you'd step in. He's been lying to you the whole time. He told you you were an orphan. And of all the people in the world to come after me, why would he send you?
Because I'm the best. You are obviously not the best.
Now, this is the latest film from Academy Award-winning director Ang Lee. who seems to have had a very strange career as of late. I would kind of compare it to, maybe this is not quite as spot on as I want it to, but like Robert Zemeckis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Robert Zemeckis won an Oscar for Forrest Gump, and then like spent most of the 2000s making weird technological crap that no one really liked.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's a little bit happening with Ang Lee. Notably, this film, of course, has two Will Smiths.
Yes.
Is that two Wills Smith?
Yes, two Wills Smith.
Two Will Smith.
It's
and
it's Chris.
Yeah, two Will Smith, like attorneys general. One of them, the younger version, which, you know, looks like Will Smith circa The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, is an all-digital creation. And performed, I think, by a motion capture. I don't know.
There's oh, this
of...
one?
Yeah.
I don't think there's any motion capture.
There's got to be something.
I believe I watched a promo video where they said no motion capture. I think it's entirely visually created.
That's
which is interesting. Perplexing.
Anyway, but also notably, this is a the second film in a row from Ang Lee, which is in a high frame rate.
Yeah.
And you saw it in high frame rate, correct?
I did, yeah. And
okay, let's describe this for a second, real quick. High, you know, movies are normally projected at 24 frames per second. This is 120 frames per second, right?
Yes. Well, that is one of the formats it's in. I also think that it's showing it in 48. I think.
48 was what the first Hobbit film screened at. Which fuck that.
And it doesn't really tell you at what theater you're at, like what frame rate it's showing at. So I couldn't tell you if mine's at 48 or 120. I would know the difference anyway. but yeah, and that's, I think, what I want to talk about the most when talking about the movie, because I don't get it. I don't, and I've seen people talking about this movie in high frame rate and saying that, like, their mind was blown by it. There is nothing that this format can do in its current state that doesn't make it look completely fake. And that's mm-hmm. my biggest problem, is that when I was watching it in the high frame rate, like, yeah, it's interesting and it's a little, it's different for sure, but every little thing looks so fake. Like, all the explosions look fake. It looks like they're on a movie set. And that's the soap opera effect. That's why they call it the soap opera effect, when you don't turn that thing off on your TV, because everything moves so slowly that you can see every little frame, where you can tell when you're looking at sets and like fake backdrops and stuff. And I think in a big budget movie like that, when there's a lot of camera tricks and stuff, it's that more obvious. So, you know, I get why they do it in action sequences, because I think that there's occasional stuff where you're like, oh, that looks cool. But for me, it amplified how fake everything looked. And it's really distracting. I don't know why they're trying to make this into a thing. I don't know what it adds, other than making your movie stand out visually in a slightly different way. But I don't think any of those things are positive.
I remember The Hobbit, the first Hobbit film, you could just see how fake all the costuming was.
Yeah, exactly.
And all the fake feet that they wore. It just is not a good look. But beyond the look, what did you think of the film itself?
You know what? It's just a big pile of nothing. You know, it is maybe the most generic story that you could possibly have. And I think because of that, it doesn't stand out in any particular way. I think that, you know, I think that when I want Will Smith in an action movie, I want Will Smith to be like kind of smart, like smart assy, kind of like, you know, like for me, peak Will Smith in an action movie is like Men in Black, right? Or the Bad Boys movies. Where,
right. The Bad Boys, Independence Day.
Yeah.
Men in Black, kind of back to back to back.
And yeah. I think this is just kind of a soulless kind of version of Will Smith. You know, obviously one is a version of him that is sort of, you know, by the book, I guess. But, you know, I wish that there was more to, you know, he's such a big personality. I don't know why you limit that when you cast him in a movie.
Yeah, I don't know why you cast Will Smith in like to be kind of like low key in an action film.
Yeah.
So my biggest thing with the film is it's it seems like it's pretty muddied in its concept. So it's a pretty high concept, you know, to begin with, where, you know, hey, what if your clone, like, that has your skills came after you, I guess, is basically the... Because the notion is that Will Smith is this, you know, 50-year-old government assassin who wants to retire, and as a result, this former colleague had cloned him 23 years ago and has been raising his clone to kind of usurp him. And fine, that's a cool concept, but just the execution of this is just so boring in a way that doesn't make it doesn't really live up to the fantastical elements of this. Because this is a problem I have with films like this, and I've had it with other films, and we've talked about it before, where you're living in a normal world until a point, and then like something fantastical or outrageous gets revealed, mm-hmm. and then everybody kind of goes on with their life as normal.
Right.
Like, this is, first of all, like he's introduced to his literal clone. Like, it's him. It's a fully identical copy of him, just 30 something years younger. And then it's like, oh, that's crazy. And then Clive Owen's character seems to be like a supervillain sort of character in this film that's otherwise supposed to be sort of grounded in reality before you get to the clones.
Yeah.
And like, it's never really clear as to why the plot is I'm kind of being vague here, but it's the movie doesn't really lay it out super clearly as to why anything is really happening. I don't know. I'm stammering here because I'm having trouble remembering anything that actually stood out in the film, other than the younger Will Smith is an amazing digital creation until it starts to talk.
Yeah, and by the way, let me say this too, because I've been just reading. I guess it mentions in several articles being both motion capture and de-aging, but I swear that promo video said that they didn't use any of that, so I'm mistaken.
I know that they were talking about, it's not typical de-aging.
Yeah.
I mean, it still is. But it's not, like, he's not performing the scenes opposite himself. I think he's performing, it's like the Rocket Raccoon has Sean Gunn.
But let me ask you this, because here's my big problem with what you're, because this is going to go with what you're about to say, is that it feels so pointless when you have him in a motion capture suit and you have de-aging technology that's pretty solid at this point. It's not perfect, but it at least doesn't have that total fake quality that a completely computer-generated face does, where, like you said, the mouth does not work in this thing. Mm-hmm. So why don't you just de-age and have the guy use his actual mouth? Like, it's weird. Like,
yeah, that was the problem I had in Rogue One also with the Grand Moff Tarkin character of Peter Cushing. You see the process of that, and it's an amazing replica. And then when it talks, because it's like a ghost, you know, when it talks, it looks like a video game. But, you know, the process of that is they had a guy there performing it on set with, you know, motion capture dots on him. And I don't know. Look, I'm no visual effects artist, but I don't know why you can't just use some guy's real mouth, you know, like the Conan segments with Arnold Schwarzenegger from back in the day, like just superimpose the mouth on. Like, I don't know. It's just, it seems to be the one weakness that this thing has, you know, cause otherwise it looks amazing. Like I don't know how it looked in high frame rate, but the normal projection I saw, I mean, not talking, the clone looked amazing, but I don't know. There's so much technical wizardry going on in this thing that it feels like the story just kind of got second or third attention from Ang Lee, you know, and
It's definitely half cooked, you know.
Yeah, and you know, it I think it's a great concept. It'd be really cool, but it doesn't, there's no wonder to it. There's no, how did this happen? There's no
But don't you think that the reveal of it and like certain characters finding out about it is like the wonder is on screen from the characters but isn't like justified or earned in any way?
I mean,
but from the audience member, I guess I should say.
I mean, it's hard to estimate that because we already know going in, you know. And I think that's the biggest problem these days with films is it's hard to be surprised.
Yeah.
You know, so if it was a reveal, and you know, there's a final reveal that you're like, I know what this is gonna be.
Yeah.
Like. That's not a surprise either, because even though that one wasn't told to you beforehand, I don't know. Again, it's like I said, it's like everyone's living in the normal world until all of a sudden there's a cloned human being here, and then it just is sort of like, oh, that's crazy, huh? And then no one really gives it kind of a second thought as to the like ethical implications of it all, and
right,
and what it might mean, and anyway, there's just a lot of. There's a lot of things that this movie could have been. It could have been like a creepy sci-fi action thriller, and I just don't think it's really anything. It's a time waster. I don't think it's bad. And you know, I've spent a lot of time shitting on it. I don't think it's bad, but I think it's really, really missing something that could have made it mm-hmm. a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's, I like the cast, you know, I think Clive Owen's acting in a totally different movie than everyone else, but you know, Benedict Wong and, Mary Elizabeth Winstead are fun. I like Will Smith a lot. And I mean, the guy barely looks 51.
Yeah.
It's not really, it's kind of interesting that de-aging him, like the only real thing you can tell apart is like his hair. Like, it's like, oh, we gave him the Fresh Prince, like, flat top fade.
Yeah, if
like,
you put a wig on him and he shaved, I mean, I don't think it would probably look pretty de-aged.
I mean, he's aged very, very well. So, you know, de-aging him. I think, I feel like they probably, like, made his hair gray in this film on purpose to make him look older.
Probably, yeah.
Anything else? I feel like we kind of sputtered on this one because it's just not, there's not a lot there.
It's a nothing burger.
Yeah. What's your grade for Gemini Man?
I'll give it a C.
A C? I'm going to give it a C+. I didn't totally hate it, but I don't think I can confidently recommend it. So.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to our next movie, El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie.
You're 22 against my 45. Winner takes all.
Like the Wild West?
Yeah. Like the Wild West.
Why? Come on.
Jesus, Neil. Come on, man. I didn't mean this.
Casey, shut the fuck up.
I'm not gonna get another one then.
No, but you come on. Shoot.
You ready?
Now, of course, this is a true sequel to the groundbreaking and mega popular AMC TV series Breaking Bad that ended in 2013. I think I believe it started in 2009.
I think that's right.
I don't think most of the world knew it existed until like 2012. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden it was the show everyone was talking about. Going into its final season, you watched it as it was airing, right?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, I did too. I personally fucking love it.
Yeah, me too.
I also love Better Call Saul. I think at times, Better Call Saul might even be a better show.
I agree.
You know, that's on hiatus now. I believe they're heading into their fifth season, not until next year.
Yeah, I don't think it has a release date, but I'm pretty sure that it will be next year.
I'm hearing that might be the last season too. But I don't know about that.
I don't think that's the case, because I think that they've said that they see an end in sight, but I don't think that they've officially.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is the Vince Gilligan created world of this, you know, Albuquerque crooks and underworld. I don't know what you'd call it. Just the low lifes in Albuquerque, which is interesting because Albuquerque is like, it's set there because of tax reasons, and it's become such a character in this whole drama.
Oh yeah.
That it's amazing. Anyway, so this is the sequel. It was sort of shot in secret, and then like a month out was like, hey, we're releasing this on Netflix. And you saw it actually in the theater. So what did you think of El Camino?
I did. I think we're going to have to go into a spoiler territory at some point in this review. I think it's too hard to talk about.
I think we should just go ahead and start by saying right now there's going to be spoilers. So
yeah, let's do that, just because there's so much of what I want to talk about that's going to be in there. And then you have to tell, I mean, there's certain characters that pop up throughout that I think it's important to talk. So, but anyway, you know, I was thinking a lot about this movie in the days before it was coming out, and I was trying to figure out what it was that I wanted from the movie. Cause I'm usually a little bit unsure of things like this. I think everyone was famously a little unsure about Better Call Saul until we saw what it was.
Right.
But you know, to take a movie, I'm sorry, to take a show that ended like Breaking Bad, which ended with Jesse kind of driving away, finally free from Walt and, you know, free from all of that stuff. And in the catharsis that came with that, I think a lot of people argued, you know, I think a lot of people think that they stuck the landing. But I think even if you don't, you think that Jesse's ending is still pretty good. And so, you know, you're taking that and expanding upon it, which some would argue doesn't need to be expanded upon. So my thoughts going into it was, what I wanted from this was I wanted it to feel like it added to the canon of Breaking Bad without taking away from the finale that we got. And I wanted it to feel like it was in the same tone and style of the show that they crafted so perfectly. And I wanted it to feel like it was necessary. And I think that for me, it checks all those boxes, which is the most that I could ask for it. I think that, you know, starting off, I would like to, you know, point out that Aaron Paul has had a really strange career after Breaking Bad has ended, where he never really ascended to the sort of stardom that I think a lot of people thought he was bound for, right. You know, after Emmy winning performances. And, you know, there's a short period of time where they tried to make that happen. He was in Need for Speed, which was terrible. And he just really hasn't had any roles that seem to be worthy of whatever talent he has. And it was so great to see him back playing Jesse, who, you know, Paul's work in Breaking Bad was really on the shoulders of his tortured performance as that character, who was put through the ringer time and time again, and by the end of the series was a shell of himself. And to go back into those shoes, because the movie picks up right where Breaking Bad left off, and to see him in the first half of that movie and through most of the movie be that same tortured person, I think was incredible. And I think Aaron Paul is phenomenal in the movie.
Yeah.
I think that, and this is where I think you and I differ slightly, is for me, the pacing of the movie is a little bit strange. And not necessarily in a bad way, but, you know, for me, one of Breaking Bad's best qualities was its ability to draw out tension. And I think that, you know, they did that over longer spans of time, and they could take something tense and dedicate a whole episode to it, or an episode arc or something like that. Whereas, you know, you don't have that luxury in a 2-hour movie. And so for me, I think that the seams are sort of there to where this felt like a mini series that was sort of condensed down. So I think that the beginning part with Skinny Pete and Badger in the Breaking Bad universe would have been its own episode. I think that the flashbacks that happen with Todd, which we'll get to in a minute, would have been its own episode. You know, I think that I wish there was more time to play with some of these plot lines, because I think it takes away some of the tension just a little bit when they're not able to draw it out in the same way. Like the scene where they're at Todd's apartment and there's the refrigerator scene. I think that would have been played out over 40 minutes or 50 minutes naturally. And I wish that it had a little bit more time to breathe for the tension element.
But dude, I love that. There's that sequence is so good.
It's fucking great.
And there's an overhead shot that's amazing.
Yeah. And it keeps the aesthetic of the show, which is great because the show always looked beautiful and was shot really creatively. My favorite thing about the movie by far is the flashback presence of Todd, who is played by Jesse Plemons. Yep. And those scenes...
Who
I know, where you're going with this.
He's just a little fatter than he was.
And it takes place prior to in those Breaking Bad times. And so
maybe he was on steroids or something, like had a bad cough. And
it was funny to I started to watch the beginning of El Camino on Netflix, and I saw they showed a recap. And having seen the movie already, they showed scenes of Todd, and I'm like, ooh, boy, this is.
Oh, did they not do the recap at the theater?
They did not, no.
Oh, see, that was very helpful.
Oh, I wish I would have. Yeah. I mean, when I saw it, I was like, oh, I wish I would have had that. But
yeah.
That being said, Jesse Plemons is so fucking good as Todd, and he has this way about him that, and I was talking to our friend James about this, is that Todd is maybe the scariest villain in Breaking Bad, because he's like an aw shucks nice guy murderer. Like he's completely insane, but like feels bad about it almost. And
I mean, he's clearly like a psychopath.
Yeah,
you know, has no empathy. It's like a psych. You're the counselor here. Is there like a combination of psychopath and sociopath? Because he's endearing like a sociopath, but has no remorse like a psychopath. Sociopathy?
Yeah, it's just sociopathic, because a sociopath is still going to do all of those terrible things while still being then. Kind of charming, but. You know, and I think those scenes are really great and all really, really funny. Like the best parts about the movies are when you're like the super dark humor. Like there's a scene rolling up someone in a rug and then throwing the rug off of something. But, you know, and I think that the best, not only is that great, but the magic trick that Vince Gilligan and to another degree, what the guys over at Breaking Bad are doing. I forget Peter Gould and
Better Call Saul. Yeah, Peter Gould.
Better Call Saul.
Yeah.
The magic trick that they pull with that show is being able to take moments and characters where we kind of know what's going to happen and still draw tension and emotion out of it. And there's a scene where they go out to the desert and Jesse finds Todd's gun and is about to or thinking about shooting him. And, you know, as people, we know how that plays out in Breaking Bad. I mean, we know that eventually Jesse strangles Todd during the shootout. But in that moment, it's super tense, and it's Aaron Paul gets to put on his best performance, and Jesse Plemons is great in that. And I would have watched a whole movie of Todd and Jesse. I was completely enthralled at that stuff.
No, I 100% agree. I've loved Jesse Plemons since Friday Night Lights, where I first saw him. He's always, and it's still kind of amazing to me how he still like pulls off like a grungier Matt Damon. Vibe. I've gotten that from him ever since. Like this kind of, he's got the nice guy thing, but he can be just a total scumbag. And I think that's on display here 100%. And no shit. There's the scene. It's after the intro to the movie where he shows up at Skinny Pete and Badger's house, and Aaron Paul takes a shower, and then he's looking out the window. And he flashes back to looking up at the cage with the tarp over it. And then a silhouette comes in, a shadow comes in. And I literally, me and my fiance were watching this, and I literally said, fucking Todd. And sure enough, it was fucking Todd. And God damn, that's such good shit with Jesse Plemons.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not to take away from anything else in the film. You know, I think Aaron Paul is great. And the way the film is structured... Now, see, here's what I disagree with you on the pacing part. Pardon me. Look, I could see how you could stretch this out to, like, say they did like four extra episodes. But at the end of the day, you kind of get how it's going to work out.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't think that Vince Gilligan was cruel enough to pull the rug out from under Jesse. Like, this is, to me, it's a little bit like Toy Story 4, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Like, we got a perfect ending. But he, you know, here's another round. Here's another victory lap with these guys. And I think it's better than Toy Story 4 in that respect, but it still is like there's a lot of fan service, and I'm totally fine with that. But, you know, there was never a doubt in my mind that it was going to end up with Jesse succeeding in his plan to be redeemed.
They weren't going to make this movie to like fuck with Jesse again.
Right. Right. You know, and I think there's some really great stuff throughout this film, and the flashbacks to different points in Jesse's life.
Yes. They serve a purpose, which is great.
And it shows off Aaron Paul's range so amazingly.
Yeah.
Cause there's a scene late in the film, and again, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
That takes place in, I believe, season two of Breaking Bad, where it's, of course, Bryan Cranston as Walter White returns, and they spend some time in a diner. And basically, it's Jesse. It's like the recent high school graduate, you know, kind of asshole, brazen Jesse. I think it's the one time in the movie he says bitch.
Yeah.
And, you know, Walt sort of berating him.
God, it was so much fucking fun to watch that play out.
And by the way, I sent you that, right? The secrecy with which they shot that scene is incredibly crazy. Like, that scene is like Bryan Cranston flew on a private jet and they like threw a bag over his head like a hostage, and all the extras in the scene are like cast and crew, family. It's really crazy how rich this show is that it was able to go back and you know, revisit this, you know, the character. It's the same character, but he's markedly different by the end of the show.
Right.
And, you know, there's also appearances by, Jonathan Banks as Mike, who kind of kicks the whole thing off.
Yeah. And also I want to say this too. We'll go back to it after we talk about the Walt scene.
Well, I'm just saying the Walt scene is I mean, it's the chemistry, no pun intended, that those two actors have is, I mean, it was just something was incredible. And that's part of the reason that I'm sure we've talked about this, and most people might know that Jesse was supposed to die.
Yeah.
After the first season, and that Aaron Paul stayed around and ended up winning Emmys for this shit. And is a testament to how good he is. And I think I'm hoping that, like you mentioned, Aaron Paul's career has been kind of a little, you know, stunted since Breaking Bad. He's being added to the newest season of Westworld.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Which I'm interested in because the show severely lacks humanity. And if there's one thing Aaron Paul can bring to something, it's humanity.
Yeah,
and I think that's the biggest thing about the Jesse Pinkman character is that, yeah, this guy started out as like a dipshit teenager, but he ended up being the most redeemable character out of all of these criminals.
And I think that, you know, not to continue to single out scenes, but I think it's important to show. I was astounded through several times during the show during the movie to see how easily they fell back into what made the show so great and just in its balance of tone, because there's also that great scene with Robert Forster, who passed away the same day that it came out.
Dude, that was crazy. Yeah, we finished watching the film. I was like, oh shit.
Yeah. And there's a scene there where he calls, Jesse doesn't have enough money to retain his services. And so he calls the cops to try to get Jesse to go away. And Jesse goes on this really long speech about how the phone call was fake and staged. And like, as he's like finishing, you see a cop car roll up.
Yeah.
In the back. It's just so funny. And it's such a great payoff. And I love that they're able to capture that essence. You know, it's the same way that I felt the same way when I saw that as I did the first episode ever of Better Call Saul, the first scene of that show where, you know, Jimmy is giving this long impassioned speech about how they have to let those kids go, and it's just boys being boys, and then they cut to the guy just presses the play on the tape, and it's them like having sex with a severed head. Like it's just so like only those guys and girls can pull that kind of stuff off. So, you know, and I think that the best thing that it serves to is, and the reason I think that it hits so well as like an epilogue or a coda on that particular story is sort of its construction of showing, well, we're going to use our flashbacks to show that, you know, Jesse at one point had ambition and at one point had his whole life ahead of him and had a lot of things that he could do. And then, you know, cutting it back with seeing him at his absolute lowest and then ending with him kind of getting the fresh start that everyone, you know, hoped for him as an audience, but he hoped for himself. And so I was very, very satisfied with what this movie ended up being. And I don't feel like it tarnished anything about Breaking Bad. I think that it added to the story in a way that what felt organic the whole time. I never felt like any cameo or anything was too much fan service, and people, I know a lot of people are calling it fan service, but I, other than it's just plain existence period, I don't really think reeks of fan service. Now,
yeah,
I do wish that, and one other thing, because I don't want to be totally glowing about it, I liked the storyline about the welder as a new character and a new bad guy. I do wish that they would have put a little bit more legwork into fleshing that out a little bit, because I you know, especially when they try to kind of connect the dots in a way that you were like, well, I kind of think he might have remembered him, but, you know, anyway.
Yeah, I get it. That was a little, I don't want to say ham-handed, but not handled as well. I mean, that actor, I can't remember his name, Sam something, he's also in The Righteous Gemstones, and he's really good at playing a dirtbag. Also, it reminded me that people like Kevin Rankin are in... we're in Breaking Bad. The fan service thing I think gets used as a pejorative a lot, and I don't mean that in a bad way. And I think it's again, it was just a very, very welcome opportunity to return to this world. And I think that's part of Better Call Saul. I know you're not so crazy about the Better Call Saul Gus Fring stuff, are you?
I'm not. I think that, well, I have two major complaints with Better Call Saul. I think that the Saul and Kim and used to be Chuck stuff, I think that is so much more interesting than the Fring stuff that I wish that more time was spent on the more interesting stuff. But, and kind of on the same similar tone, I feel like Better Call Saul, for the most part, feels like three different shows, and I wish that they would somehow coalesce into something at some point here.
What's the third?
The Mike stuff. Because Mike and Saul don't really interact much, and then Mike and Fring are not together all that often either.
I just see it as two shows. I see it as like the Mike. I see it as Mike's story and Saul's story. But I mean, again, we're complaining about having an embarrassment of riches when it comes to this shit.
Sure, yeah.
Because I mean, those are all. I mean, Michael McKean is so good in that show.
Yeah, I was really. I kind of wish that plot line, because I don't want to spoil that, because I don't want to spoil another show when we're talking about the movie.
Well, I mean, I think it was a natural evolution of that plot line.
I think it was too. It just sucked to see. You know.
Yeah. I get you. I get what you're saying. But I mean, I, again, just to reiterate on this film and everything about it, I had a great time with it. There's nitpicks for sure. There's stuff I wish would have happened. And you know, it's by its very existence, it's a little predetermined that we're probably not going to, like I said, Vince Gilligan's not going to pull the rug out from under Jesse and have him get fucked over again.
Yeah.
But what's your grade for El Camino?
I give it a very healthy B+. I think it's really, really good.
Same here. I was really frightened of it, and I obviously think that that with them having kept their muscles sharp with Better Call Saul helped it literally fall back right back into place.
I do wonder. I think that since it premiered on TV first, it's technically Emmy eligible, because I think it just has to hit TV before it hits any other platform. or hit streaming before it hits any other platform.
Yeah.
So if so, Aaron Paul and Jesse Plemons should both win Emmys for their performances.
Oh, 100%.
In this movie. Those two guys are absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, I had kind of forgotten Jesse Plemons' role as like a sort of dark Todd. As Todd is sort of a dark Jesse,
mm-hmm.
like Jesse without a conscience, and was reminded of it. And then like the little touches in Todd's stuff, like the fucking tarantula.
Yeah,
son of a bitch, man.
The fact that he kept the tarantula from kid he killed.
God. Damn.
But then see that juxtaposed with trying to talk Jesse into having some soup. Like, it's just so, it's such a crazy thing to see how murderously in cold blood that guy will be if he feels even the slightest bit threatened. But then mm-hmm. also see him in those scenes, like, actually genuinely seem to worry about Jesse's well-being and stuff. It's such a great juxtaposition that I think Jesse Plemons plays so, so well.
Yeah, it's a shame The Uncle Jack neo-Nazi stuff wasn't stronger.
And that was always my complaint with that last season of Breaking Bad. After everything they were that had gone on, that they had been through with all of the... Like, Hank, I think, is one of the most redemptive characters ever in a TV show, where he went from, like, a cartoon character to being, like, the best character on the show in those later seasons, I thought. And, you know, I just wish at the end of the day it didn't all come down to some Nazis. You know, I didn't. That's the one. My one complaint about Breaking Bad is that it. You know, the downfall and demise were some characters who just kind of showed up that didn't have any depth to them.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, you could point to that as being the power vacuum that Walt created by killing Gus. And
that's I think that's valid. I just wish that it would have had some.
It probably should have been a cartel, though. Frankly,
yeah,
not some skinheads. But then you wouldn't have, you know, then Jesse Plemons wouldn't have necessarily fit in too terribly well. I don't, with
no, probably not. He does not look like he would fit in.
Yeah, I mean, it's so that's streaming on Netflix now. Is it still playing in theaters? I know they were extended it for a little bit.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I just looked at because I was checking to see if Jay and Silent Bob was at Draft House, and Draft House has a screening of it tomorrow night. And I would, you know, if you want to throw a few bucks at it, I would see it in a theater. It looked great in a theater, and it feels to me, it feels more like a movie when you're watching a TV product in a movie theater. I think otherwise it can get a little bit muddy as seeing it as a movie versus like a super long episode of TV. But
it was actually shot in a wider aspect ratio, I noticed.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And, you know, and I wish it did have a little bit more of like the Albuquerque, you know, but the thing is, so much of the great stuff in Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad with Albuquerque is like transitional stuff, which doesn't really serve a purpose in a movie. So I understand.
Man, some of the stuff with Mike in Better Call Saul, I'm just gushing right now, but some of that like Stark where he's like alone in the desert.
Mm-hmm.
God damn, that is some gorgeous shit.
Yeah, they've really nailed that aesthetic.
And I mean, honestly, I don't think they could. I mean, Jesse was like a nationally wanted fugitive, and they couldn't have he couldn't really be out in the open in Albuquerque
mm-hmm.
so much,
but like the scene where they're driving out to the desert with Todd is great and stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's almost like an alien landscape. And
yeah
so you can stream that now. If you want to see it in the theater, go right ahead.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna stop you. But it is on your Netflix account queue right now, so you don't have to.
Yeah, and the one thing I would say is, If there's anyone out there who hasn't seen it, if you're a Breaking Bad loyalist, I really don't think you're going to be disappointed by this. And I also don't think that they ruin the thing that you love by any stretch.
Oh, no, not any. I mean, this is basically they're operating with no break here. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that's fair to say, with Better Call Saul having been in production since 2015. So they had, you know, I mean, it's almost been seamless since the show ended. So it's not like they lost their step at all. Is it 100% necessary? I don't think so, but it totally justifies its existence.
Yeah. And is it totally necessary? By definition, probably not. But to me, I feel like I am glad that I'm more glad that I saw it than feeling like I would have been fine with Jesse just driving away. I'm glad that this exists, and I'm glad that we have a continuation of his story, because ultimately it ends the same exact way. We just fill in a little bit of a gap.
And you get like one again, like I mentioned with Toy Story 4, it's like a victory lap. You know, you get to spend some time with these guys again. You know, I mean, people like, and like one off characters like Robert Forster, and then people like, again, Jesse Plemons. Robert Forster's really, really good.
Yeah, he is. He's great.
And then
of course, you know, you get the you know, everyone's been wondering if we would ever see Walter White again. And you get it in a way that doesn't betray the character or feel like, you know, a stunt cameo. I think it not only feels natural within the storyline, but also the way that the scene plays out. Like, you could insert that scene into season two and it would fit in perfectly.
Well, yeah, it's not like he's you know, a vision that comes to Jesse.
Right.
You know, future Jesse. It's just, it's a flashback to these elements.
I saw some people, maybe it was Alan Sepinwall, but someone said that, you know, it doesn't necessarily feel like an epilogue, as sometimes it feels like pages that were ripped out of the actual Breaking Bad book.
I can see that. I can totally see that. Like, I think, you know, and I think, I think Jesse deserved the concrete redemption.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, the end was really good, but I think the character had evolved so much that it deserved to be like, no, he did finally get away.
Right. And, like properly got away.
Right. All right. That's going to do it again for this week. Next week, I'm going to be in Japan by this time next week. So, yeah, it's going to be I've never flown that far or that long before.
Are you good with flying?
Oh, yeah, I'm fine with it. It's just, this is the first time it's going to be like, I think it's like a 12-hour flight, and then you cross the international dateline, and it's, so we're leaving like Monday morning and getting there Tuesday afternoon. It's a weird fucked up thing. Yeah. Hopefully I'll sleep. Why are you not a good flyer?
I'm a bit of an anxious flyer. Yeah.
You pussy.
Yeah. Well, no, I didn't fly for the first time until I was in my 20s because Jesus. I was afraid. And wow. I've never flew on my own until earlier this year.
Wow. Look at you. All grown up.
I'm a world traveler. Well, yeah, not world, but.
I'm fine with it. I wish we could have. It would be nice to spring for the first class seating, where it's like it turns into like a goddamn bed.
Yeah,
it's like a pod that's a bed, but that's like $7,000, and
that's insane.
Like, I could just sleep in a chair. That's fine. Yeah, so if you want to reach us, you can email us at podcast@cinesnob.net. Find us on Twitter @cinesnob, Facebook Cinesnob Critic. We have another podcast that we haven't updated in a long time called Re-MCU. When the wedding stuff's over,
we'll get back on track on that. I actually want to get back to that one a little bit.
I do too. It's been kind of a hectic 6 months for me doing this wedding stuff, so I haven't had the real time to sit down and watch Thor.
I knew that was going to be the one that would get us, man. I knew it was going to be, and the thing is, once we get past like Age of Ultron or so, I think most everything is pretty decent, at least watchable, you know. So I'm looking forward to getting into
Age of Ultron is the last one I remember being like a chore.
Age of Ultron was a real, but you know what, I've only seen it once, so maybe it's better on second watch. I don't know, I just thought it was really bad when I saw it the first time.
Yeah, and by the way, that podcast is called Re-MCU. I don't think I ever said the title. Oh, yes. But that's we're re-watching the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies. Maybe by the time we get another episode out, there'll be another movie out. But
maybe, I mean, well, shit. I mean, maybe a Marvel TV show by then.
Oh yeah, are any of those coming out on Disney Plus?
I don't think so. Right. On launch, I think Mandalorian is the only like big live action thing that's coming out.
By the way, we should have talked about it, but they released a list today of all the films hitting Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. Films and like TV series hitting Disney Plus on release day, and it is ridiculously crazy.
Well, I pointed out to you because we mentioned this in our Mr. America review,
and I noticed it before you pointed it out to me. But yeah,
that the Shaggy DA, the movie that Greg Turkington is trying to get everyone to watch, is.
I've actually seen that movie.
Have you really?
Yeah, because it was this is in the days of Blockbuster when I was a child, me and my sister would get to pick out a film, a movie to watch. And, the kids section was always pretty shitty. And I know we watched The Shaggy Dog, and then The Shaggy D.A. is the sequel.
Oh, because I've heard of The Shaggy Dog.
There's a 60s version of The Shaggy Dog. I think has Fred McMurray. All the old Disney movies had Fred McMurray, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But then The Shaggy D.A., I believe, is from the 70s. And then they remade The Shaggy Dog with Tim Allen. I think about 15 years ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, The Shaggy D.A., it's a weird sequel. Like, it doesn't make any sense to, if you don't know, it's part of the Shaggy Dog cinematic universe. But anyway, there's a bunch of shit in there that, like, I'd forgotten existed, like the Davy Crockett movies.
Uh-huh.
And then some stuff I never even heard of, like the Biscuit Eater. And
yeah, there a lot of that stuff I had never heard of. And then I was surprised to see how many, I didn't realize how much Fox stuff, like Fox Family stuff, was part of that. So, like, I was scrolling down and I saw Rookie of the Year, which was one of my favorite movies mm-hmm. as a kid. And I was like, oh shit, I guess that is Fox.
Yeah, all that stuff is, it's all in the canon now, baby. It's all,
which, by the way, I don't know if you've heard this, but it's sort of wreaking havoc on
repertory
theaters, because mm-hmm. now Fox stuff is so famously, well, maybe not famously for people who haven't tried to book stuff, but when we were doing our Draft House series, I wanted to show a lot of stuff that was Buena Vista, which ended up being part of Disney. Therefore, Disney doesn't allow repertory screenings of anything. So I got shut off on showing like High Fidelity. I couldn't show What About Bob. There were a couple other movies that I couldn't do that I wanted to do. Oh, Ed Wood, I couldn't do. And now Fox is being added to that. And a lot of these theaters rely heavily on that Fox catalog to show, and now it's officially out of the rotation for what movie theaters can show.
I was curious, didn't include Miramax though, right? Like Miramax went away from Disney, like even the stuff that's produced under them.
I believe technically that's correct.
Because didn't we show something that was Miramax? Maybe I'm making that up, but
I don't know.
I don't know, because they don't own Miramax anymore.
Right. I that's a good question. I would have to look into the movies that we showed. I just know that Buena Vista was a big blow for us for a little while.
Yeah, anything from our Touchstone. And because I think High Fidelity is Touchstone, and I think so is Ed Wood. But one thing I was curious about, and I don't know if there's information out there, is if all this stuff is going to be there all the time.
Yeah, that will be interesting to see.
Because if it gets rotated out, then, that's going to be kind of shitty.
But they're, like, vomiting the whole Disney vault out on this thing. Although there are a couple notable omissions, like the Mighty Ducks movies are not included on the initial rollout. But I heard someone say that they're on HBO in rotation right now, and that might be why.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there's probably some streaming rights still to work out the kinks for.
Which, I was going to get Disney Plus to rewatch the Mighty Ducks movies, so you've lost a customer, Disney.
did you watch the animated series?
I have not seen that.
I mean, but it's like, they're like alien ducks. Like, it's not like the kids.
Yeah. I know, I've heard about it. I have not seen that, but I saw a bunch of people freaking out. Like legitimately, the most I've seen people freak out about, oddly, is Gargoyles was the one.
That and Gummy Bears. That's the two afternoon. Well, I think Gummy Bears was a Saturday morning cartoon, but mm-hmm. like those are the two that have kind of not been around for a while. Like Gummy Bears, like fell off the face of the earth,
mm-hmm.
and then Gargoyles has been kind of floating around here and there. That Mondo actually released a Gargoyles print as part of their Disney show a couple years ago, but that's like the newest Gargoyles merchandise I'd ever seen. Gargoyles was actually really, really kind of dark and interesting for them.
I remember having Gargoyles toys when I was a kid. I don't remember any sort of media related to it.
It was kind of along the lines of Batman the Animated Series.
Okay.
Like it wasn't quite as serious and as well done, but it was a lot darker and action oriented than than the other Disney stuff. And I believe it had like half of the next Star Trek, the Next Generation cast in it.
Oh, wow.
I think Michael Dorn plays a character and Jonathan Frakes is the bad guy.
So, and when does that launch? When does Disney Plus launch? November 11th?
November 12th. I've already, I've signed up for the, we signed up for the 3 years.
Of course you did.
At the discounted rate. It's cheap. But, so, you know, look, all Disney shit aside, it's an amazing catalog.
It's a crazy catalog, yeah.
I mean, I'm, you know, we're having, obviously, you know, you're busting my balls because we're having a Disney-themed wedding.
Yes.
But, I mean, again, that includes a whole mess of shit. That's every Marvel film, obviously, every Star Wars film, and then other stuff, like we mentioned, like the Touchstone stuff and, you know, Who Framed Roger Rabbit and High Fidelity and Ed Wood and...
So, but again, that stuff's not going to be on the platform. So, well, you know, like High Fidelity and Ed Wood. But my concern is, and we'll wrap up in just a second, but my main concern with Disney Plus is once you get beyond like Mandalorian, and once you get to the Marvel series, is there going to be enough adult programming, adult oriented programming, I should say, to keep the interest of someone like me, right? So that's my main concern.
You're looking for new programming or just anything that's...
I think new programming, because catalog stuff I can find, you know, I can find on any streaming service. What I want Disney Plus for is to see original programming that I can't get anywhere else, because...
Yeah. No, I agree. And I assume that's got to be coming, you know, to keep... I mean, look... They have the ultimate selling point in the Disney stuff and the Marvel stuff right now and the Star Wars stuff. And they're looking to, I mean, they're out to break Netflix's back like immediately. Like they're going for the kill shot on Netflix literally right out of the gate.
They are. And so what I'm interested to see is if like Fox starts putting stuff, original series on that platform that's adult oriented.
That's probably something that's going to come, because it isn't. Ryan Murphy went to Netflix, right? He's not with Fox anymore. Okay, I mean, that's got to be in the plans, you know. But I mean, when you strip away Netflix stuff, I mean, all they really have that's culturally huge is Stranger Things right now.
Well, and I wonder too if also, since Hulu is included in this, maybe like a Hulu series will be ported over to Disney Plus or something. Like, because what a lot of people were thinking was that the family and general stuff on Disney Plus, and then the adult oriented stuff on Hulu.
Yeah.
So I wonder kind of how that integration will work, or if maybe Hulu starts greenlighting stuff for Disney Plus, or I don't know. It will be interesting to see how that plays out, because just from a consumer standpoint, for someone like me, yes, it's cool to have like the Disney and the Marvel movies and catalog titles there, but you know, the original series stuff is what I'm really interested in, because otherwise I want to have something that I will keep the service for. And then the Marvel shows I will keep the service for, but you know, those are a year or two away, and Mandalorian is only one mere series. So I'm just curious to see what kind of original programming they churn out for adults.
Yeah, I mean, there's at least the non-scripted one with where Jeff Goldblum walks around and is fascinated by things.
I'm looking forward to that called. One. I believe it's called too. The World According to Jeff Goldblum.
Why wouldn't it be? I assume that that's going to be something that's, you know, maybe not necessarily for adults per se, but maybe more of a teenage, early adult, something like Stranger Things, which is a pretty broad appeal.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume is what they're going for, and I think without having seen them, I feel like that's a lot of the market that's on the Freeform channel,
mm-hmm,
that Disney owns. It's probably a little more teenage skewing, but I would assume that there's, you know, something more in the pipeline besides just Marvel and Star Wars shows. But you know, right off the bat, it's not like, everybody's fucking has original shows now, like fucking Mr. Mom on, is it Vudu? What is it? Have you seen that? Did I send you that?
Yep.
It's Vudu, right?
It is Vudu. Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, if Vudu is programming original stuff for adults, then I'm assuming Disney Plus is going to also.
Is X-Men stuff on Disney Plus or on the original launch?
I know the X-Men animated series is.
Oh, okay.
All those Marvel series from the 90s are there. I don't know about the movies. It'd be interesting to, I'm curious if maybe they'll develop like an X-Men series. Because for as trippy as it was, I enjoyed Legion on FX. It's a little dense to get into, but I wouldn't mind seeing an X-Men adjacent TV series. And maybe someday we'll see that New Mutants movie doesn't exist anywhere. The one that was supposed to come out.
That's right. Yeah, that'll get dumped, that'll get dumped on Disney Plus.
Yeah. Anyway, we've talked enough about this.
It'll pull a Cloverfield Paradox Super Bowl where they're like, "Go watch the New Mutants after this movie." How much you want to bet they do that shit?
I mean, they're gonna play right into Netflix's playbook, and I don't know how Netflix is gonna survive as they do now.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with, you know, the Disney content being pulled. I don't think that was ever really a big giant part of their streaming, but like The Office mm-hmm. being pulled and Friends being pulled. I mean, they're getting Seinfeld, but you know, I don't know how well Seinfeld resonates with younger people.
Yeah.
Cause I know a lot of younger people that fucking love The Office, which is weird to me because it doesn't seem like it's, I mean, I guess it's essentially sort of timeless. I mean, at least it's of the time now, but The Office is so huge mm-hmm. still. And Netflix losing that, I think, is huge for them.
Well, at least you can find it on Peacock.
Oh, God. I forgot that was the name of it. You went when The Office was at, they had a, NBC had a, or Comcast had a promotion at South By.
Oh, I missed that. The desk?
Yeah. But they were teasing it airing on Cozy.
Oh, man.
It's like, watch The Office on Cozy. Like, what? I don't know if NBC owns that, but. Anyway, we've talked enough about this stuff, so anything else before we go?
Oh, no, I think we're good. Congratulations on your upcoming wedding.
Yeah, thanks.
And your trip to Japan.
Thanks. I'll bring you back a crazy Kit Kat.
Either do that. Yeah, I want a good flavored Kit Kat and like a super weird, like, actually, never mind. I'm not going to go there. I was going to go somewhere, but I'm not going to go there.
How about like the grossest tasting Kit Kat possible?
Yeah, and we'll do a taste test episode.
By the way, that reminds me, once I had someone brought back some candy from Australia,
mm-hmm.
and they brought back some Lifesavers, and the scent or the flavor was musk.
Ugh.
So it tasted like a man.
Oh.
Man, it was weird.
And did so you keep eating it?
I just put the whole thing in my mouth. The whole pack in my mouth. All right, on that note, I'm Jared Kingery.
I'm Cody Viafania.
Thank you for listening to the Cine Snob podcast. To read reviews, interviews, and more, visit cinesnob.net. See you next week.